The Pat Kenny Show on News Talk
with Matter Private Network. During current restrictions, don't ignore your health concerns. Our expert team is ready to help.
But we'll begin with that story relating to the role of NPHET, because throughout the pandemic, NPHET have been accused of running the country with the government taking a back seat. A new report by Trinity College School of Law states that NPHET became the de facto decision maker throughout the pandemic. The report identified a lack of transparency in how key decisions were made. It also said that there was a lack of consultation with the stakeholders affected by NPHET's decisions. For more on this, I'm joined by Assistant Professor of Law at Trinity College Dublin, Dr. Sarah Hamill. Sarah, you're very welcome.
Thank you, Anton. It's great to be on.
It's a fairly wide-ranging report. There's 16 recommendations and it covers everything from the reporting of deaths through to the role of NPHET. The latter, of course, is getting a lot of attention. Maybe you might walk us through the key findings in respect of that functioning as a de facto decision maker.
Well, the key finding there is that there wasn't clarity with the relationship between NPHET and the government. And obviously, you know, what we've seen since March 2020 is that there have been some clashes between NPHET and the government, but certainly after sort of December 2020, there was a sense that maybe NPHET was its recommendations were just being adopted unquestioningly, and so and that leads to concerns around like how is NPHET making these decisions, who's on NPHET, and how are other stakeholders to get their voices heard? Because, you know, if you look at the report, the example that we use is, people were turning to the media to sort of get some of these measures addressed. So, for example, you couldn't, there was an issue around children's shoes, and there had to be a sort of an exemption for children's shoes that they could be sold, but that was raised through the media rather than through sort of what might be considered the normal channels.
Which is not the only time that the report raises the role of media. The report also points out that in some instances, NPHET began, and I think this is a direct quote from the report, began using the media to force the government's hand when not appropriate.
Yep. That, I think, happened around sort of the September-October 2020 period. So NPHET was certainly engaging with the media, and that is, I think, a positive thing. But there was a sense that they were using the media to force the government to follow its advice in a way that the government wasn't then doing.
Who do you hold culpable for this? Does the fault lie with government for not having a more standoffish relationship, or was it the manner in which the advice was provided that it was too close to final decisions?
That is an interesting question. And so what we stress in the report is that it is for the government to make decisions. And obviously, in the context of a public health emergency, in the context of a pandemic, it is entirely appropriate for government to be listening to experts like NPHET. But a key part of good pandemic governance is ensuring that there's transparency around the decisions being made, like how are they being made? Why are they being made, that these are clearly communicated, and that these decisions are made in an accountable manner. So the decision for making, so the responsibility for making the decision does lie with the government. And so it was for the government to ensure that its advice was taking, it was getting advice that took in all of the issues, and all of the relevant stakeholders had a chance to sort of weigh in, rather than just sort of listening to a single advisor, like NPHET.
To some extent, is that unavoidable, though? I would have thought the combination of speed, risk, and lack of expertise in those who ultimately are tasked with making the final decision lends itself towards crisis decisions ending up in the arms of experts, whether that be the central bank in the middle of a financial crisis or NPHET in the middle of a public health crisis.
I would say that is correct. And certainly when we think back to March 2020, that is the kind of thing that we would expect to see. And that is understandable, particularly as these emergencies sort of begin and start. But as they sort of continue, there's scope to make sure that other voices are being heard. So, for example, in the report, we talk about there were some subgroups set up initially around sort of March 2020, and they were disbanded, but they were dealing with things like ethics and behavioral change, and most of these were disbanded in the summer. And in an earlier report that we put out, you know, we flagged concerns that there weren't people on sort of these advisory groups who were able to raise the human rights issues, some of the ethical issues as well weren't necessarily being raised. And so there, you know, while we would expect experts to be listened to, that advice must be sort of counterbalanced with other considerations as well.
And do you see anything in the way of deleterious consequences from either the lack of transparency around decisions or the winding up of the subgroups or the delegating of decision making to NPHET, or is it just a lack of best practice?
I mean, I would hope at this stage that it's a lack of best practice, and certainly, but certainly there are, you know, other areas of concern. Some of my colleagues have been, you know, we're already working on issues around transparency, particularly with relation to the advice that the Attorney General might give on other legal changes. So there is a concern that this sort of might continue. Now we hope that it wouldn't, and that you know, government would sort of listen to the recommendations in this report and make sure that there is transparency and accountability moving forward in both in the governance of the pandemic and in all areas.
Now, I mentioned that the report is fairly wide ranging. One of the other areas that it covers was the reporting and counting of COVID-19 deaths. And in that context, what did you find?
Well, that was actually one of the sort of the most interesting findings, because obviously the pandemic has shed light on things that aren't working as well. And in the Irish context, there's, you know, reporting of deaths and registering of deaths. So all deaths have to be registered, but not all deaths are reportable, if that makes sense. So what happened is that deaths from COVID-19 are reportable, but they don't have to be, they have to be registered. But Ireland is somewhat unique in that it has a very long window for when the deaths have to be registered. And what this means is that the sort of official state data from the Central Statistics Office, it can take up to 22 months for that data to be final.
And what's the implications of that?
Well, the implications of that were a slight delay in getting accurate counts of the deaths. Now, up to 20% of deaths in Ireland are not registered within 3 months. There are sometimes, you know, legitimate reasons for that. There's maybe been an inquest and a post-mortem and that sort of procedure. But in terms of where the sort of the daily death counts are coming from, again, there's a slight lack of clarity around where they're coming from, because the COVID deaths are reportable to you know, the district coroners, and that information is fed through to the Health Protection Surveillance Centre. But these the registrar will also be making reports to that centre as well every day, so that There's a number of sources of information, but we know that the registrar's office, they may be getting a slight lag in when the death happened and when it's registered.
One of the things obviously that's interesting about the functioning and the interaction between the public health emergency team and government is that there is currently lots of scope to benchmark it, because in whatever form or whatever title they carry, countries all the way around the world now have that same interaction between government and public health advisory bodies. Is there any country that you would point to as the benchmark for this being done well and being done transparently?
I mean, I think given the speed at which this happened, I don't know that any country has done this as well as they would like. And so I think the important thing for us is to ask questions of whether we did this as well as we could and what we would need to change moving forward. Because, you know, different countries have different contexts, but
Well, you mentioned previous reports done by Trinity. In the instance of this report and of the others, do you get a sense that you are casting these into the void, or do you think they have any impact?
I mean, it might be a bit too early to say, because things have been changing quite swiftly. But I think certainly, you know, the fact that the media are picking up on it is a good sign, because the media has been one of the main ways to sort of make these changes, one of the main avenues in which to sort of provide a forum for people to respond to the advice and the recommendations.
Well, we'll see what, if any, reaction government provides during the day. Thank you very much, Sarah, for coming on this. Dr. Sarah Hamill, who is Assistant Professor of Law at Trinity College Dublin, member of the Trinity COVID-19 Law and Human Rights Observatory.